Happy birthday, Mom.
Oh, yes. Happy birthday. Happy birthday, Mom. Here's your birthday song. It's really short. It's not too long.
Well done.
Man, way to really master the release calendar. You are really on your game.
Well, we know that this is one of your mom's favorite movies, right? That's why we picked it.
Yeah, that's why we did it.
Yeah.
Happy birthday, Mom.
She loves especially, well, both Frank Gorshin, who that was like one of her first crushes as a child.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is true.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen! And not a one of you is prepared for it!
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway.
Evening. This is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 1995 film 12 Monkeys, directed by Terry Gilliam.
And I have to say, when we were younger at Cousin Joe and Aaron's house, the movie Time Bandits freaked me out.
Yeah, I have not revisited it.
It's supposed to be like a comedy, right? I remember it being very scary. Yeah. As like a, what, like 4-year-old?
Well, yeah, I'm sure. Well, and this movie reminded me a lot of Brazil.
I've never seen Brazil.
From the look?
Yes.
All right. I can see that.
A lot of the use of that Frenius lens.
Yeah.
And then a lot of like the...
The palette, the color palette.
And the gadgetry. Like the sort of the almost, not quite a steampunk aesthetic, but a little bit.
Yeah, I can see that.
So, Brother Jay, I think this is on your list, right?
It's on my, yeah. When you say list, I think it gives people the misapprehension that, gives people the impression that it's on my list of judgment. It's not on my list of judgment. It's on one of the movies. It's one of the movies that I own.
Well, and I know we had it on the calendar before, and it was one of the podcasts we had to abort at the last minute.
Yeah, and that's fine, because I like this movie. This is a good movie. It's not...
Is that Derek's truck?
Yes.
I can hear it that time.
The whole neighborhood can hear it.
It's not a diesel, is it?
Oh, yes. It's an F-350 diesel.
Does he roll coal?
No.
Okay, that's good. I still think one of my favorite internet videos is those guys who go through the drive-thru and use their big-ass horn. Like, they're going around town videotaping themselves, like, using their big, gigantic train horn thing on their car to scare people.
And the woman in the drive-thru throws the soda in his cab.
Yes. Have you seen this, Drew?
I have not.
Well, she leans out the window because he orders a soda. So she leans out, takes his credit card and has the soda in the other hand, and he gives the honk, and she just, like, shakes a little bit, and then she's like, oh, hell no, and she upends the soda and throws the credit card back at him, and the soda splashes all inside his truck.
Nice.
Yeah, it's kind of satisfying Schadenfreude from my perspective, because they're dicks. What they're doing is a dick move.
Oh, completely. Yeah.
There's no just, it's not funny. I don't understand. It's like, it's not even college humor. It's like bad high school humor.
Exactly.
And yet, how many millions of views? Because you and I have both seen it, which means we both, you know, added to the views.
Oh, no. I want to see it, because I want to see them get their just desserts.
Yeah.
Or beverages or whatever. So, back to 12 Monkeys. So, you like this movie, but I sense you have some reservations.
No, I don't. I actually still love this movie. The only reason that it's a little dated, but not too bad, especially because it's a time travel movie, essentially. Spoilers, lol. But also now having the TV show, it's hard because there's a comparison that can be made. So it's very kind of interesting to see the path the movie took and now watch the TV show and the path the TV show has taken, because there's some similarities. But
yeah, we'll get to the TV show later in the episode, though. What's your initial impression of the movie, though, on rewatch?
It's a good solid movie. I'd give it a B still.
Because I know you're a big time travel movie buff.
Are you being sarcastic?
Source Code and Primer.
Yeah. Yeah, but my problem in those movies weren't the time travel.
I enjoy both of those movies.
You know, Back to the Future time travel movies.
Absolutely. Oh, I don't mind time travel movies. Actually, I think to anticipate what I think you were going to say, I think I have a problem with time travel movies that try to explain too much.
Yes. And this movie does not try to explain too much.
At all.
Yeah. Which is, I think, to its betterment.
Yeah, exactly. It's a fantasy.
Yeah.
So, Brother Drew?
Yes?
tell us your relationship with this movie.
I really like this movie when it first came out. I don't remember seeing it in the theater. So, it was... this came out, what, early 90s?
95.
I would have been in college. I don't think I saw it in the theaters. When it first came out on video, though. I really liked it. I didn't like it as much this time around. I'm not sure why. I don't know if I was just in a cranky mood or it's a little bit dated. But it's good. It's weird. This time around, I was a little put off by a lot of the strangeness. I felt like at times it was being weird just to be weird, which may be effective the first time you see it, and it's kind of shocking, but yeah, when you're expecting it, I think it gets old quickly. But I thought it was good. I enjoy the exploration of the causal time loop within it. I also enjoy the ambiguity about whether or not the unreliable narrator is actually insane, or he's just in a bad situation.
Yep, I liked it a lot. We watched it probably 6 months ago and then had to bail on it for the podcast, but watching it again, I think you're right, Drew, about it being sometimes just wacky for wacky's sake, but I like the fact, you know, one thing I like about it is that I guess sort of like Tim Burton, you know, he kind of commits to the universe, and it's wacky, and I recognize it as his universe, just like I recognize Tim Burton movies as being in Tim Burton's universe. But I still thought it was fun, and it turns out, although he's probably not a very nice person to work with, but Bruce Willis is really, really compelling. And I was surprised that the Brad Pitt was so...
He does crazy really well.
Yeah, I mean, he was Tyler Durden in this movie.
Kind of was.
More like Tyler Durden's like uncool younger brother.
I could see that.
The great thing about this movie is that everybody, from the actors to the directors to the... set creators, everybody in this movie 100% commits.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Nobody in this movie is half-assing anything.
No. No.
But that was also 95. I mean, at the time this movie came out, this was a pretty forward-thinking movie. I mean, we hadn't seen quite a lot of this kind of movie. Now this kind of movie is pretty common.
Well, it was also kind of an envelope-pushing movie with regard to, you know, Terry Gilliam, I think it was at Universal who was the production on this movie, because whoever did it was the same production as Brazil. And I think Brazil, people thought was just too wacky. I don't think Brazil made a ton of money. I could be wrong.
You know, I have a machine.
Yeah. Gilliam was surprised that he was actually asked to make the movie again, considering that they didn't like him the first time. And so, but he did it, and they let him pretty much have his way the entire time instead of trying to knock heads with him the whole time. In fact, at the end, he had a different ending in mind that was more mellow, and the director of photography, or maybe one of the producers, suggested like the bigger multi-crane shot ending, and he's like, sure, and he just like piled it on to make it as expensive as possible, and they just went for it. They said, okay.
Yeah, Brazil budgeted for $15 million. Would you care to guess the gross?
$20 million.
Not even close.
It has to have done at least that much in videos, right? I mean, this is beloved cult movie.
Well, it'd be box office though that we're looking at, so it wouldn't be videos.
I'm gonna say 4.3.
So the weekend gross, let's see, 96, 95. Sorry, it came out at 86. As of 1986, it had made $2 million. As of the end of 86, it had come up to almost $6 million worldwide. But that's pretty abysmal.
Yeah.
Considering it, you know, is a $15 million budget.
Well, do you know what the budget and their box office for this was?
Yes.
Do tell us.
The budget was $29 million estimate. IMDb's funny because it says $29 million and one. I don't know where they went.
Estimated?
One. Yeah. The gross is $56 million.
Significant digits, man.
Somehow I have a box office figure of 168.
Well, and that might be, I mean, IMDb
yours
maybe is
just domestic too. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. This movie made money.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, this was the beginning of the Brad Pitt days. I mean, Brad Pitt wasn't the
staple.
Yeah, he wasn't the headliner that he is now.
Right.
And I was a little confused because I was like, where did Andy McDowell's accent go? Turns out it was nice. Madeline Stowe.
Yeah, IMDb says 168 million worldwide.
Okay. So, shall we get into the plot?
Yeah.
Okay. This movie starts out with a title card that says 5 billion people will die from a deadly virus in 1997. The survivors will abandon the surface of the planet. Once again, the animals will rule the world. And that quote is excerpts from an interview with the clinically diagnosed paranoid schizophrenic April 12, 1990, Baltimore County Hospital. So the plot is that this was released in 95. A deadly virus wipes out most all of humanity in the years 1996 and 1997. And James Cole, played by Bruce Willis, is a prisoner living in a facility beneath Philadelphia at roughly 2027. And Cole is selected for a volunteer duty, where scientists train him and send him through time on a mission to collect information.
He's really voluntold.
Yes, he's totally voluntold. He needs to collect information on the virus thought to have been released by an organization known as the Army of the 12 Monkeys, who, by the way, have an awesome logo. Whoever did the design for that logo, fantastic.
Yeah, no, it was pretty good artwork. Yeah,
I was thinking of ways to differentiate my black SUV from all the rest of the black SUVs, you know, to find it in a parking lot. And there's no aerial topper available because there's no aerial. And I thought, you know, Maybe like a 3 foot in diameter 12 monkeys things on the hood would be cool.
Maybe go more subtle and just do some door panels in it.
There you go. So Cole remembers things. That's what he's good at.
Yeah, and this movie felt really fresh at the time because we weren't mired in the overabundance of post-apocalyptic movies like we are nowadays. And even so, this dystopian vision of the future was, it's really unnerving. Because there's nothing familiar about it, really. Even when he gets to the surface, everything is really disorienting. And he seems like a crazy person, so you don't know if what he's seeing is really what he's seeing.
Well, exactly. And the set design in this movie is incredible. I mean, the details, I think you had mentioned before, the nobody was half-assing this. The details on the sets, you know, like, no matter where, especially in the scenes of inside rooms, like interiors, everything is like at a weird camera angle or slightly skewed. And like the scientists in the future, everybody has some sort of lens over part of their face. And so that's all very disquieting. And, you know, you're supposed to sympathize with the Bruce Willis character, but he doesn't even know what's going on most of the time. So you just get information kind of like fed to you piecemeal.
A fun thing about watching this with the
subtitles.
Yeah, subtitles on was all those scientists actually have specific roles. Like the lady is astrophysicist. One of the dudes is an engineer. Another is a biologist. Another is a zoologist. And there's no context for that in the movie. It's just how their captions are displayed.
Do the questions that they ask him or the things that they give him, do they make sense with the character?
Not especially.
No, I mean, they don't ever ask him anything really specific.
So he is sent, first of all, he's just sent to the surface to collect samples, and so you get an idea of what the surface looks like.
Yeah, and you get that great shot of him breaking through the snow.
Oh, and just like, you know, the bear and the lion and all that stuff.
And that suit with I want the lights in his suit. That was the greatest suit.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
It was a stylish suit. I would go dancing in that suit, except not anymore because I would never leave the house. But
so, yeah, so the idea is they send him on the run up to the surface, and then they send him on a different mission. This time he is going to collect information on the Army of the 12 Monkeys or the spread of the virus. They're going to send him to 1996 when it happened so that he can find out who's doing it so they can send a different team to go and take care of it. And that way they'll have changed the present for them.
That was not what I got at all.
Yeah, they don't expect him to change the present. They only want to find out a way to be able to cure the virus going
forward. They want a pure sample of the virus so that they can...
Oh, okay.
They can retake
the world.
Okay, yeah, so he's not... for some reason, I had the impression that they were going to send a second team back to change things, but no, he just is going to come back with the virus.
No, I think they're aware of the paradox. They can't change the past. All they can do is observe.
Okay.
Yeah, he says that a couple times, that it's already happened. So it can't change.
Ah, okay. All right. Hey, call me a dummy. Who cares? Fine. I don't have feelings.
It's a closed loop.
Okay. So.
We're not calling you a dummy. We're saying the sock puppet's a dummy.
Bastards.
Wait, I thought I was the sock puppet.
Not this week.
No, you're not the sock puppet. The sock puppet is a doppelganger or some other German word. If Verfignügen. Although that's more of a Swedish cowardly soccer player kind of.
Actually, Verfignügen is German.
Well, I know, but I said it in the... Never mind. Bork, bork, bork. So, during this whole thing, you know, again, he's sort of an unreliable narrator, and he has this recurring dream that involves a chase and an airport shooting. And it's pretty clear right from the get-go that he is the little boy in the dream, right?
I didn't get that.
Okay.
I mean, I know that now, but I watched it. I didn't get that.
Yeah, dummy. Oh, sorry. I'm lashing out.
At least say it with a sock puppet to soften the blow.
Elizabeth, I'm coming home.
What?
Sanford and Son.
Oh.
Dummy. No, wow. You haven't seen Sanford and Son lately, have you?
No.
It's really not.
Not since I was a child.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen it.
Yeah. Fred doesn't treat Lamont very well.
Although one of the guys I work with sings the theme song to it all the time, but doesn't know why, because he's never seen the show.
Oh, that's funny. No, we only sing the song when we're driving past like a particularly like junkyard-looking house. Well, we just refer to it as a burp, burp, burner. Which can actually slide right into the Rockford Files theme, unfortunately, for me. So, anyway. Okay, so.
That's where it just went to in my head.
Yeah. Back to 12 Monkeys. So, Cole arrives in Baltimore, not in 1996, but instead in 1990. And he is arrested and hospitalized in a mental institution by a Dr. Catherine Rayleigh, played by Madeline Stowe, who is in, among other things, Stakeout, The Two Jakes, and The Last of the Mohicans.
And many seasons of Revenge.
Yes. And while at the hospital, he encounters one Jeffrey Goins, played by Brad Pitt. And Jeffrey Goins is a mental patient, and he has anti-consumerist leanings, much like Tyler Durden.
Games, games. Here's some games. Games that want to get out. See? More games. Games, they vegetize you. See? Yeah. If you play the games, you're voluntarily taking a tranquilizer. I guess they give you some chemical restraints, huh?
Drugs!
What did they give you? Thorazine? Haldol? How much? How much? Learn your drugs. Know your doses. It's elementary.
I need to make a telephone call.
Telephone call? Yes. Telephone call? That's communication with the outside world. Doctor's discretion. Hey. All of these nuts could just make phone calls. It could spread. Insanity oozing through telephone cables, oozing to the ears of all these poor, sane people, infecting them. Wackos everywhere, plague of madness.
Come on, let's go.
In fact, very few people. Very few of us here are actually mentally ill. I'm not saying you're not mentally ill. For all I know, you're crazy as a loon. But that's not why you're here. That's not why you're here. It's not why you're here. You're here because of the system. There's the television. It's all right there. All right there. Look, listen, kneel, pray. Commercials. Productive anymore, at least to make things anymore. It's all automated. What are we for then? We're consumers. Okay, buy a lot of stuff, you're a good citizen. But if you don't buy a lot of stuff, if you don't, what are you then, I ask you? What? Mentally ill. Fact, Jim, fact. If you don't buy things, toilet paper, new cars, computerized blenders, electrically operated sexual devices, stereo systems with brain-implanted headphones, screwdrivers, miniature built-in radar devices, voice-activated computers.
Take it easy, Jeffrey. Be calm.
And it sounds right out of Fight Club.
It really does.
And he does it well. Did you read how Gilliam got him to play Manic?
Yep.
No.
They were going to try and send him to speech school because Terry Gilliam was kind of concerned that he wouldn't be able to do the syntax right. And so he was very concerned about this. And then he decided that he was just going to take away Brad's cigarettes and not let him sleep for 3 days.
And it worked.
So that's some method acting, huh?
Yes.
And they did something weird to his eyeballs.
I think he had like a contact lens in one.
Yeah, like an off-center one.
Yes. Marty Feldman style.
Did you recognize Dr. Rayleigh's boss, Dr. Fletcher? Frank Gorshin?
Nope.
Yeah.
Familiar with Frank Gorshin?
That's why he looked familiar. Yeah, he's the Riddler, right?
He's the Riddler.
Perfect. That was good. Listen, I got a riddle. Next time you see Batman, you want to lay it on him?
All right.
All right, now, what's got 1,000 feet and only one head?
I don't know. What's got 1,000 feet and only one head?
500 guys sharing a can of beer.
Can I go now?
Oh, yeah.
No. Yeah. I got a couple of riddles you may not have heard.
All right, what are they? Riddle me this. What do you call a sleeping bull? All right. What do you call a sleeping bull? Answer. A bulldozer. Tell me, what's the difference between an elephant and a flea?
Gee, we would sure like to know the difference between an elephant and a flea.
Well, an elephant can have fleas, but a flea can't have elephants. Oh! What did the chick say to the other chick when the hen laid an orange instead of an egg?
What did the chick say to the other chick when the hen laid an orange, not an egg?
The chick said, look at the orange marmalade. Puzzle you a puzzle, a quiz you a quiz. Gonna keep you guessing like nobody's business. I'm a whiz, and my name is the Riddler. Tell me which is the easier to spell, fiddly-dee or fiddly-dum?
Gee, we give up, which is easier to spell, fiddly-dee or dum?
Fiddly-dee, cause it's spelled with more E's.
Hey, Riddler, where's the worst weather for rats and mice?
When it's raining, cats and dogs.
Why is your nose not 12 inches long?
Because then it would be a foot.
Hey, Riddler, why do birds fly south in winter?
Because it's too far to walk.
Why was the mother flea crying, Riddler?
Because her children had gone to the dogs.
Gee, Riddler, you know everything.
That's right, kids, and you know why? Because I'm the Riddler.
And he was a master impressionist back in the just post vaudeville. What was that show? Ed Sullivan Show days.
He's in Carson a lot.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
And probably even like Alan Parr and Merv Griffin and those kind of shows too. So if I have my history right, which it's possible that I do not. But
yes, see our Lost Casablanca episode.
Yes, exactly. Also, see the notes. I've been pretty good lately about whenever I mention something, or one of us, usually it's me, mention something that's almost but not quite correct, I'll put the correction in the notes. For instance, the New American Cinnamon the New American Cinnamon Movement in 1970s, our American New Wave film. You can click on the link and see what I had called something like the new directors or something. I don't know what I called it, but it was wrong. Anyway, I'm dragging the show down, people. I'm dragging it down. I'm sorry. I'm a little tired. I'm dragging it down. So
that's not fair. We're all dragging it down.
I'm dragging it down to hell. But by the way, back in when Cole is in his cell before they pull him out, because he's next to his buddy, pal, Jose, they talk, you hear in the background that they're declaring that they're all residents because of the permanent emergency code that has been enacted. And you hear that in the background several times. And that's the auspice of how they induce volunteers, is by the action of the permanent emergency code. So some semblance of some strange fringe, just tendril of the government still remains after civilization's collapsed.
Oh no, it's martial law. It's the
end of the world as we know it.
Yeah, and he feels fine. He wish he had some Tylenol, though. So,
one of the really great details about the asylum in 1990 is everything on the TV is designed to make you feel as crazy as possible. because it has like really kooky, like those old timey cartoons that are just nutty.
Yes.
With like animals beating each other up and stuff. And, or it's got like some documentary about animal testing.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like the last things you'd ever want to let severely crippled mental patients actually watch.
And the whole mental institution thing is actually pretty great. One of the details that I found wonderful was in the room where they're all sleeping, where it's all the beds are in a circle.
Mm-hmm.
It's just crazy.
Well, was it filmed in that? So there's a pretty famous prison that was actually designed to make inmates feel crazy, where they would, it was designed like in the circular pattern, and they would bring them in blindfolded and spin them around, and then like the hallways were at different arcs of a circle. So they'd spin them around and then send them down to a hallway, and they'd be disoriented and have no idea where they were.
Yeah, it's something about like no direct sunlight, or you couldn't tell mm-hmm. Where the sunlight was coming from.
Right.
Good Lord, that sounds horrific.
Well, check the notes. I'm sure we'll have links to maps and things if you like.
All right, Sock Puppet, you get on those notes.
Yeah, if it wasn't filmed there, because I don't think it's still being used today. If it wasn't filmed there, I think it was inspired by it for sure.
Yeah, there are a lot of creepy former asylums that are fascinating. Although, you know, Potato Potato Asylum, Kennedy School. I mean, I remember in Portland, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't that an old school? They turned into like a mall theater thing?
It was an elementary school, and they shut it down. It got basically, I don't think it was condemned. It was just not serviceable anymore. And the McMenamins brothers bought it and turned it into a hotel resort with restaurants and a movie theater and a waiting, like a bathing pool. And it's actually quite a fun little place now.
Yeah, but
like there's the detention bar and the gymnasium is now a movie theater.
But it's a little creepy because it's got all that stuff still, right?
Well, yeah. So if you go into the men's room, it's still like the elementary school urinals. So you're peeing on the floor because the urinal is on the floor because it's built for elementary school. So, yeah, it's different. And you go into detention bar and, yeah, there's still classrooms. Like you go into Cypress Bar and it's a classroom. And if you stay in one of the hotel rooms are classrooms. It's actually pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, it's, yeah. Anyway. So there's another, Cole finds a spider and he puts it in his mouth and that's all very creepy.
No. He puts it in a vial.
Yeah, but doesn't
he? Well, in the asylum, he put one in a vial. But yeah, in the asylum.
He eats it.
The vial was his mouth.
Yes.
And then his belly.
So it's like his little Renfield action, too.
Also, they have that when he first leaves, they put him through the shower, and then immediately in the asylum, they put him through the shower.
Oh yeah, there's lots of parallels. Like the scientists in the future are very much like the board of doctors in the asylum.
Yeah, so I'm sure it would be very hard for him to know if he was crazy or not because there are parallels.
As an audience, it was hard to know if you're crazy or not.
Yeah.
Yeah, in a great way, in a fun way.
Yeah, I mean, the entire movie is structured to make you as the audience as disoriented as possible.
And it works, and it moves along. I appreciated that, too. The pacing was pretty great. Mm-hmm. Because he keeps, you know, he doesn't go back and forth a lot, but he goes back and forth enough to kind of keep you on your toes.
And there's that great speech by that old guy who he encounters in the bunny slippers, in the suit and bunny slippers, about having the divergent personality.
I don't really come from outer space.
Oh, L.J. Washington, he doesn't really come from outer space.
Don't mock me, my friend. It's a condition of mental divergence. I find myself on the planet Ogo, part of an intellectual elite, preparing to subjugate the barbarian hordes on Pluto. But even though this is a totally convincing reality for me in every way, nevertheless, Ogo is actually a construct of my psyche. I am mentally divergent in that I am escaping certain unnamed realities that plague my life here. When I stop going there, I will be well. Are you also divergent, friend?
He describes exactly what could be going on with Cole to explain why he's jumping back and forth between these realities. So even that weirdo conversation sets the stage for you as a viewer to not know what's going on or what you can trust from Cole, since you're essentially seeing the movie through his perspective for the most part.
Well, and their method of getting information back and forth is he is supposed to call this phone number and leave a message that then they'll retrieve in the future. but because they sent him back to 1990 instead of 1996, no one's at that phone number, which causes an issue.
The voicemail doesn't exist yet because it's a private residence.
Yes. But just as he tries to escape and they catch him, in a very disorienting way, because he's also on drugs. They dope him up with chemical restraints.
Yeah, Bruce Willis did a really good job of drooling like a drugged out person.
Yeah, I think
he didn't even need the ball gag like in Pulp Fiction.
I think they probably had actually a drool wrangler. You know, in the continuity, the poor continuity person had to make sure that it was the right viscosity and length of tendril.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I saw that in the credits.
We'll look for that in the show notes.
Yes. So he's they take him back to his own time, and he's interviewed by the scientists, who then play this distorted voicemail message that gives the location of the Army of the 12 Monkeys, and that they are responsible for the virus. And so he's also shown several pictures of different people, including Jeffrey Goins. They send him back in time, but then they really screw up and they send him to World War I France.
Where he sees his buddy.
Yes.
Jose.
And he ends up getting shot in the leg and photographed.
Buck naked.
Yes.
Yeah, so the future scientists just kind of yank him back whenever they feel like it, right?
I think so, yeah.
Not when they feel like it. Yank him back when they feel something has gone amiss or it's his time to come back.
But they don't do a lot of explaining on when that is.
The show does a better explanation about why and how.
Yeah, well, which is good. I mean, with a show, you'd have to explain more. Just like the Sarah Connor Chronicles, they had to go into things in a little more detail just because you got to kind of keep the thing moving. But when he...
Yeah, I've got the first two seasons of the show queued up, but I specifically did not watch them yet because I didn't want it to cloud how I enjoyed this movie specifically for that reason, because the same way that the Sarah Connor Chronicles universe turned out to be my favorite Terminator universe. I wanted to be pure when I experienced this movie.
And I have the first season I've already watched and the second season on the DVR. So I will wait to watch the second season until you start the second season. So let me know.
Oh, yeah. And if I have to bail for some reason, you guys can pick up that Chronicle.
Yeah, I'll probably start it this week.
Okay, let me know.
Yeah, put it on the list. So then we flash forward to 1996. Or flashback. I don't know. Anyway, we go back to 1996.
Are we going back?
Dr. Rayleigh is giving a lecture.
It's the past.
Yes, about the Cassandra complex. And at her post-lecture signing, Dr. Peters, David Morse, who's always great in everything, asks about mankind's sustainability and how humanity's destruction of the environment is the real problem. But when Dr. Rayleigh departs from the signing book lecture, whatever, Cole kidnaps her and forces her to take him to Philadelphia.
And he quotes a line that later is a line in a movie, in a Bruce Willis movie.
I know, that's crazy. Between Tyler Durden showing up in this movie. Yeah, anyway, so we get to meet David Morse with a weirdo ponytail. And we end up with this kidnapping that looks pretty legit. And we learn that Goins is the founder of the Army of the 12 Monkeys. And they go try to find him. And they do find him. And he is crazy as ever. But he denies any involvement with the virus and actually suggests that wiping out of all humanity was really Cole's idea in 1990 at the asylum.
Wah, wah.
Yes.
Yeah, again, fucking with the audience.
Yes. So is the whole idea really Cole's idea? It's all very complicated. So then, of course, Dr. Rayleigh finds out that he's been telling the truth because he had a bullet in his leg, which is one of his problems when he kidnapped her, and she took it out. And she finds that bullet, she finds out, I think, by the Law and Order SVU guys who do the CSI investigation, tell her that
who is actually from Law and Order SVU.
Yes. That it was a pre-1920 bullet that was taken out of his leg. And she flips through her research and finds a picture.
Wah, wah.
Yes.
Cole also knew the outcome of the Boy in the Well hoax.
Yes, there was a Boy in a Well hoax, which is very nice. A nice little touch. I appreciated that. But in the meantime, so Dr. Rayleigh is discovering that maybe Cole is actually knows what he's talking about. At the same time that Cole is convincing himself that he is stark raving mad. So it's kind of fun how those trajectories differ.
Well, Cole's also deciding that he doesn't want to leave the present that he's in. That if this is his reality or surreality, regardless, he doesn't want to leave 96. Because there's air to breathe and there's music to listen to.
Oh, and he loves the music of the Fat Black Man.
Yep.
And they visit one of our favorite movies. Not really, not all that much, really. Yeah, I don't really like that movie. We get to see Vertigo.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's parallels with that because there's a discussion of time travel and Vertigo, as well as changing the color of one's hair. And so that's all very complicated. And there's even, I guess, the Bernard Herrmann score is heard during the scene of the 12 Monkeys.
Yep.
So, and Catherine ends up wearing the same coat that Kim Novak wore in the beginning of the movie. So it was all very intentional.
It was a nice homage.
Yeah.
Have we skipped over the part where Cole beats up a pimp?
Yes, we did. Yes.
Because that resulted in probably the best one-liner of the whole movie.
Yes.
Hey! Set the cops! Hey, I'm an innocent victim in here! I was attacked by a coked-up whore and a fucking crazy dentist!
Because Cole ripped out his own teeth?
Yes. Which is also crazy uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he does all his kissing after he removes his teeth with a switchblade. So,
yep.
Yeah. Seems quite unsanitary.
Well, the virus is going to kill everybody anyway. What's the point?
I suppose. Yeah, and they've kind of decided that, hey, if the world's going to end, they might as well enjoy it. If they only have, like, less than a year left. So they're going to go to the Florida Keys, have a good time.
Because Cole's never seen the ocean.
Yes. And we see a lot of Florida Keys ads during this show. So on their way to the airport, though, they learn that the Army of the 12 Monkeys is not the source of the virus. The major thing they were gearing up to do is to release the animals from the zoo and take Goins' Nobel Prize-winning virologist father, Christopher Plummer, and kidnap him and put him in an animal cage.
I should say, by the way, right after they leave the hotel and the pimp, where Catherine says we should really try to blend in, as they're both bleeding.
Oh yeah. So now we're going basically. I know I'm yada yadding through the entire movie pretty quickly, but this is an experience movie. This isn't so much of a. I mean, I guess we can even talk about it without giving away the twist ending, although we've never failed to spoil a movie so far.
The twist ending.
Well, the twist is that
Cole is the virus.
Exactly. He does see dead people. And it's really David Morse who's the bad guy. But not like a maniacal bad guy. I actually liked his performance when he gets stopped at the metal detector and asked to open the vials.
He's so creepy about it.
He is. He's,
well, it's because he's instantly spreading the virus.
Yeah, he's like, mm-hmm. he's like excited and
he's like, hey, I wasn't going to start this here, but you asked for it. So guess what? Sure. You're going to be patient zero.
Yeah. Smell it. Smell it.
Should, just like happily waving it in front of the,
you should have been security nicer guard's to me.
Face. Yeah.
Maybe if you were nicer, I wouldn't have made you die, but too bad.
To sort of, when Cole figures out what's really going on. Well, and of course this Bob guy, right? The old guy. Oh, no, it wasn't. It was Jose who ends right. up and gives Cole the gun at the airport.
Right.
And says he needs to follow orders. Take care of business.
You're going
to
be a hero, man.
Yeah. So, and he doesn't even quite know what this means yet. But then once he realizes that that it's really the virologist assistant guy, he tries to run after him. And
Catherine figures it out.
Well, yeah, yes, because she recognizes. Anyway, yeah, it's all, there's all sorts of twists and turns briefly. But yeah, so we get this scene at the airport where Cole ends up watching himself be shot to death by the police. And
while acting like a crazy person.
Yes.
And now the movie comes full circle from the beginning.
Yes. And of course he prevents nothing.
Because he can't, because it's already happened.
It's a closed loop.
Yeah. So that's kind of fun. I mean, it ends on a downer.
And you meet Jones on the plane.
Exactly. You meet the astrophysicist, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who is an insurance person at the time. Yeah. So it's nice.
And is that her in present day, or has she traveled back in time?
That's her.
They've figured out.
Well, it's her in present day.
Yeah. So it's before she's become the astrophysicist.
That's what yes. I understand.
And you'll meet her in the TV show.
Her, the actual actress, or just the character?
The character.
Ah, okay.
She's one of the main characters in the show.
Yeah. Well, before we get to the show, and I do want to hear about it, don't get me wrong.
Well, Drew hasn't seen it, so I don't know that we can really discuss that much.
Okay. Well, but just based on this movie, Brother Jay, you want to give your verdict?
Yeah, it's a B. It's a good movie. If you like sci-fi and you can suspend your disbelief of it being, you know, overdone, because it's been done. But, if you can just kind of give yourself up for an afternoon, it's a great movie. It's a little long, but it's enjoyable. It's fun, and it's got some great parts. And Brad Pitt does a good batshit crazy. Oh. But all of the performances in this movie are really good.
Yeah.
Drew said earlier, no one's half-assing this movie.
Well, I would consider the story a B, but I think it's got, like, A actors. So I would definitely give it, like, a B plus, A minus.
Absolutely.
So, Drew, was it worth it?
It is certainly worth it if you haven't seen it before. Everybody should see this movie at least once. Even if, you know, like Terry Gilliam movies aren't really your thing, this has such creative performances that it's worth it. I don't know if it really holds up on multiple rewatches. And certainly don't watch it while you're tired.
Yeah.
Because it is an exhausting movie. But it is something that everybody should experience.
Excellent. So.
And I actually went and rewatched Sixth Sense because of this movie.
Oh, well, okay. We'll talk about that in just a second because I want to hear about your the revisiting of that. But let me just give us with. Twelve Monkeys, featuring as Dr. Fletcher, Frank Gorshin. who was the Riddler in 1966 Batman the Movie, which also featured as the Penguin Burgess Meredith. Who was in 1966's Madam X with Keira Dulia. Who was Dr. Dave Bowman in 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Have we talked about a Burgess Meredith movie about or involving Captain Nemo before?
No.
Does this ring a bell to you, Jason? Because I feel like this was a movie we had on tape that we watched
many times. I think it was 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
It was a remake. Yeah, because it seemed like the 70s or something.
I think it was the 80s.
The 80s even. Okay.
Yeah, I think it was later than, but it was like a remake. It was like Captain Nemo. You're right. It was Captain Nemo, but it was like Captain Nemo and it was a takeoff. But, I remember it being rather kind of campy over the top, but, really well, I think I watched it a lot.
The Return of Captain Nemo. TV miniseries.
Burgess Meredith is a miniseries?
Yeah, let me see. Burgess Meredith is actually Professor Waldo Cunningham. Jose Ferrer is Captain Nemo.
Yes, that's it.
Yeah.
Jose Ferrer.
Ferrer, sorry.
That's okay. Oh. No, but that's absolutely it.
Yeah. Interesting.
When was that?
It was in 1978.
Ah. Well, we probably watched it. Those are probably the Video City years.
Yeah, because it was only rental. It looks like it's only 102 minutes long. It's called The Return of Captain Nemo or also The Amazing Captain Nemo. And it was a miniseries, but it was only 120 minutes, so I guess it had three segments to it.
Interesting.
And here's one line of the reception. Sadly, the quality of the script did not match the caliber of the actors. So I'll let the rest of it be. Yeah, interesting.
Put it on the calendar.
I don't remember this at all. I don't even know if it's available.
I remember it. I'm having flashbacks now.
There was a dude in a turban, I think, that had a significant role in the movie.
Well, now, have you read The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen?
I've not read it. I've seen the movie.
Captain Nemo, at least in the comic, the graphic novel, wears a turban. He's a Sikh, I think.
Hmm.
So I don't know if that's how he is portrayed here. Let's see. He has kind of helmet hair, but he does not have a turban. Fascinating. I don't think I've ever seen this.
I've seen it a lot.
Huh. Yeah, we'll have to put it on the calendar.
Not really by choice.
Oh, that's okay. Hey, some of the best things, right?
Hey, Jose Ferrer was big time in the Love Boat. Good grief.
Oh, yeah. No, he was a name brand guy. Before we get on to housekeeping, Brother Jay, tell us about revisiting The Sixth Sense. Now that you know everything about The Sixth Sense, how does it hold up?
It holds up pretty good. I mean, The Sixth Sense was one of those movies that I did not see in the theater. I didn't know anything about it when it came out. Rented it. At that time, it was Hollywood Video. We had Hollywood Video here. It was like Blockbuster. And I was living by myself in an attic with a roommate. So I guess I wasn't living by myself technically, but I shared a house with a roommate that was gone 90% of the time. So I rented it one night to just watch because people were talking.
That sounds like an awesome roommate.
We can talk about that. It was good some of the time, and some of the time it was really awful because the woman, because he was married and his wife lived in another state, and then the woman he was having sex with was also married, but she lived here, and so there was some complicated husband showing up at the house looking for him kind of tension.
Oh, those are the best roommates.
Like, is he here? Who? You know who. I don't know who you're talking about, but you names would help. The guy who's fucking my wife. Nah, didn't narrow it down. Yeah, sorry.
No, that guy's not here.
Yeah.
Which guy?
Yeah. So, yeah, those were the days. Anyway, so I was alone for the weekend and was watching in my room. Hadn't heard any spoilers, didn't know anything about the movie, and watched it. And I was watching it thinking, well, this is not a bad movie. It's okay. And then it ended, and I was like, holy shit, this is a great movie. It got me. It was one of the few movies that I wasn't able to guess the ending to. Normally, you know, my brain doesn't stop and I ruin movies for myself. But this is one of those movies that got me because it was that, you know, M. Night Shyamalan twist that got me, which never got me again, by the way, because the rest of M. Night Shyamalan's movies are crap. So,
well, I'm going to disagree, but we can talk about that later.
Yeah.
Eric likes Signs.
I
like Signs until it ended. And then the last, I'll save my rant for when we review Signs. So I have so many problems with the last 10 minutes of Signs. I will fill up the podcast. So
for the record, I also thought The Village was aight.
But
you were disappointed because at the end of Signs, the guy takes off his baseball cap and he's got a long like ponytail all tucked up under there and he fools the guy.
Sure.
Anyway.
And the sign said long-haired freaky people need not apply. So I tucked my hair up under my hat and I went in to ask him why. He said, you look like a fine, upstanding young man. I think you do. So I took off my hat. I said, imagine that. Me working for you. Whoa. Sign, sign, everywhere a sign. Blocking out your scenery, breaking my mind. Do this, don't do that. Can't you read the sign?
Yeah, I got it. I just chose not.
Yeah, anyway. Not a good comedy night. So, anybody here from out of town?
So, no, Sixth Sense holds up. It was a good rewatch. Even a rewatch, it was a little creepier on rewatch, kind of knowing some of the elements.
It's a scary movie.
It's got some really scary parts.
When you see the dead people, they are legitimately scary.
Some of them, yeah. Some of the scares are pretty intense.
Girl? Yeah. The girl is terrifying. Yeah. The people that are hung in the school, terrifying.
Yeah. Little Misha Barton, right?
Oh, is it? Ah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I saw Sixth Sense opening night in a theater in Anchorage with Sandy, and we had gotten there late, and so we had to sit like pretty much way up in front, not in the very front seats, but front enough that it was an issue. And at the very beginning, when the Donnie Wahlberg shoots Bruce Willis, Sandy actually says, is this the end of the movie? Is this one of those tricks?
Oh, like, God.
She says it out loud to the whole theater. And I'm like, oh, don't talk to me in the movies. But oh, well, I'm saying this in my head because I don't want to have that conversation.
Oh, my God. No. I would totally have been like, ugh.
No, but by the end, we had forgotten, including her, had forgotten she had said that. And you could you could hear in the theater full of people, like it was packed. And you could hear when everybody discovered it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So it was amazing. It was an awesome experience. Yeah, and everybody left was like, oh, this is awesome, and none of us can talk about it.
Exactly. And that was the thing. I'm amazed that I hadn't had it spoiled for me, but then those were the days before internet was omnipresent in everybody's pocket. So.
Drew, Sixth Sense?
I also saw it in the theater pretty close to opening night, and it got me. I saw it with my wife, who had grown up a huge New Kids on the Block fan, so she was sort of devastated by the opening scene. Not necessarily because Donnie Wahlberg got shot, but because he looks so terrible. So
bad.
Like, just all skinny and gaunt and
emaciated
and almost unrecognizable.
Prison camp.
Yeah. And like that just knocked her for a loop for the whole movie. I don't think she ever recovered from that.
No, and they did a great job.
Can we just take a little tangent to ask, how are those Wahlberg such good actors? Because they really are. Mark Wahlberg is a actually legitimately good actor, and Donnie Wahlberg is actually a legitimately good actor.
Just talent.
It just runs
in the family.
Good stuff. I mean, again, I don't.
Or growing up where they grew up, they had to lie a lot.
Yeah, well, and there's no reason why they wouldn't be, and I'm sure that they did lots of performing as kids or whatever. But yeah. Anyway, that's all. Because I don't want to like either one of them. But they're good actors, so.
Why don't you want to like either one of them?
I don't know.
What's wrong with liking them? No, just embrace your like of the Wahlbergs. Just go with
it. No, it's because
he's in.
Well, okay, with Mark Wahlberg, he's easy to hate. Because he seems like an arrogant jackass. Who sometimes says dumb stuff. Which is, again, I know I say dumb stuff all the time. Although I have the power to mostly edit him out. Like, insinuating that if he was one of the planes in 9/11, he would have taken out the terrorists. Come on, man. You can't say that out loud.
Have we ever talked about what an underrated movie The Big Hit was?
Oh, that's... Yeah. We've never talked
about... Lou Diamond Phillips?
Yeah. Also somebody I don't want to like, and luckily he's not nearly as good an actor.
I love that movie. That movie's great.
You know, Lou Diamond Phillips shows up a lot in, like, the Twilight Zone remakes. Like, there was a Stacy Keach-hosted, like, audiobook remake of a lot of the Twilight Zone programs. I think it was actually on the radio. Maybe it was syndicated on the radio. But Lou Diamond Phillips is one of the voice actors for a lot of those things. I think, like, Malcolm McDowell is a guy that shows up a lot, too.
Nice.
Yeah.
He's got a good voice.
He does. And he's also hilarious. You've heard the Malcolm McDowell. I'm sure I've told you the David Crusoe Malcolm McDowell story.
Nope.
No.
One of the people I've loved working with the most is Malcolm McDowell. Because Malcolm is, he is not acting in Clockwork Orange. That is his personality in real life. That is how he is. He likes to start shit. And I called him up to be on CSI. And I go, hey, Malcolm, you want to do this episode of CSI? It's just a couple days. He goes, is that fucking cunt David Caruso going to be in the episode? I go, yeah, he's going to be. He's like, I'm going to do it. I am going to fucking torture that fucking cunt. That was the reason he wanted to do it. And he did. He came on set and fucking tortured because, you know, I mean, it is CSI. It's David's show. I mean, obviously, this can't take that away from it. It was a hit show. It's his show. And Malcolm was determined to always have the last line in a scene, even if it wasn't scripted, to always get in the way, and to, oh, like, you know, just, this is not a big deal, but, you know, they would always like to shoot David's close-ups first, which, whatever, that's fine. And he would always want the actor to read off camera. So what Malcolm would do is he would always go to the bathroom the second he knew it was time to do the scenes with David. So David would have to wait. Purposely would make him wait while he was in the bathroom. And then Malcolm would come out and not do the lines. Like, there was one scene in that, and I'm sure nobody remembers the episode, but there's one scene where Malcolm's supposed to be just on the phone for a second, and David's supposed to walk in and say, like, you know, whatever. And Malcolm wouldn't hang up the phone. He kept ad-libbing this phone call like he was on the phone with his girlfriend discussing lingerie, and I could see David's face turning red, and he finally said, hang up the fucking phone. And Malcolm's like, hold on, love. And he keeps talking and turns his back just to aggravate him. It was so hilarious. That's Malcolm all the time.
I like those stories.
So anything else? Oh, Jason, you want to give us a taste of, so you recommend the series?
I really do. It's different. Clearly it's different, but.
I mean, is it the same world like Sarah Connor was the same world?
Yes. It's the same premise world. There's some differences and some time changes. But one of the things that I was really amused by in watching the movie is Catherine's vehicle is identical in the TV series.
Oh, that's fun.
So it made me chuckle. I think it's a slightly newer model year, but it's an identical model and make.
Fun. Detail is important. So
it gave me a smile. I was like, oh, that's the same car. They did, you know, so for whatever reason, there's some crazy attention to detail.
Now, is James Cole a character in the series?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, he and Catherine are the main characters, with Jones is a very main character. Jose plays a pretty big role too.
Are they like a crime fighting duo, like the end of Pontypool?
Have either of you seen the TV show Nikita?
No.
Because the dude who plays Cole in the TV series is from that show, right?
Yes.
Yeah. That show had no business being as fun as it was.
We're not talking about the Peter Williams Nikita. We're talking about the more recent one.
Talking about the Maggie Q Nikita. It's a guilty pleasure.
So do we have housekeeping?
No, okay. I can't think of any.
Well, I'm going to do a quick speed round of housekeeping that I mentioned last week. I sort of teased. These are movies that I watched for pleasure on my vacation, the staycation. So here's a big rundown. Interrupt me if you need more clarification at any point. Hashtag Horror. It's a movie called Hashtag Horror. It's a strangely cast horror movie about cyberbullying. Yeah, Timothy Hutton, Chloe Sevigny. Okay. Natasha Lyonne and Lydia Hurst, but mostly like teenage girls. And it's not bad. It's just strange. And then Unfriended. This was a rather pedestrian found footage comedy about cyberbullying. Not nearly as good.
Were you on a cyberbullying kick?
No, you'll see. There's no real theme, but here's how they go along.
I'm guessing, did you happen to watch Bully?
No.
Oh.
That seemed too serious. These were like horror movies. So it just happened to be about bullying. And I'd heard good things about Unfriended, and I just saw the interesting cast of Hashtag Horror. And Hashtag Horror was by far the better movie. So then we get to Big Tit Zombies. Now, this was a crazy, stupid movie. Really stupid. Really crazy. It's a poorly dubbed Japanese... There's a thing, I don't know what it's called, but there are these Japanese movies that are sort of the Japanese equivalent to trauma movies that are like way overly violent, but in such a cartoony way. Like there's lots of decapitations and dismemberings with lots of blood, and it's just horrible. And half of it, or some large portion of it, is in old school red and blue 3D. Like you have to put on your 3D glasses. So it was.
Did you have some?
I did not, and it was awful, and I stopped it. I could not. I could not deal with it.
What?
Yes, maybe if I was 15, but you know, no, not in this day and age. It was just bad, and it was bad jokes. It was like a trauma film, but not even as fun as that. And I don't really find those films fun either. Next on the list, Hail Caesar. A Coen Brothers movie that was super beautiful, actually pretty well acted, especially by Josh Brolin. I'm a big fan of Josh Brolin.
I like him.
But it was completely forgettable. I would suggest that this is one of the reasons that Brother Drew doesn't like Coen Brothers movies. Because it was really pretty, but ultimately it went nowhere.
I don't like goofy Coen Brothers movies.
Well, this is a noir kind of thing, but still. I'll always be a big fan of Mary Zofries because she's the costume designer of the Coen Brothers films, because her husband is Murray Valeriano, who's a stand-up comic who does the Road Stories podcast, and he's really funny. So, next on the list, Here Comes the Devil, which is a Mexican horror movie, and it is weird and really strangely, uncomfortably sexual. Yeah, so Here Comes the Devil. Really strange. I don't know if I recommend it to anybody but like a horror fan, but it is like, don't watch this in front of kids. This is weird, weird sexual.
You shouldn't be watching any of those horror movies in front of your kids.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, okay. Actually, no, my daughter is...
Ask Brother Drew.
Yeah, well, Nightmare on Elm Street, the original. With Johnny Depp.
How'd that hold up?
It was great. I mean, you know, it's not a great movie, but it's great fun. And, you know, it's...
I've watched it recently and was surprised about how well it held up.
Yeah. I also watched Nightmare on Elm Street 3. Which did not hold up quite as well, but it is totally fun and totally like a... It's like a Rocky III type nostalgia fest for me. It's just goofy and fun, and it was the beginning of the goofy Freddy.
You didn't watch the second one? Like the homoerotic one?
Oh, no, I have all of them. Or I have the first... No, I have... I think I have actually all of them. But the rest of them are kind of bad. Even though I'm a fan of Patricia Arquette, still bad. Let's see. Next, we saw in the theater, Nine Lives, the Kevin Spacey, Christopher Walken movie. And I'm going to say, like, out loud to everybody, it is not a bad movie. It totally reminded me of, like the Shaggy D.A. or The Cat from Outer Space or, you know, those old, like, Dean Jones Disney live-action movies.
Wow.
But the trailer is... The trailer fucked it. The trailer leads you to believe it's a different kind of movie. I mean,
sure. Kevin Spacey's a cat.
Yeah, he gets turned into a cat. But there is actually a scene in the trailer where Christopher Walken like does a like casting a spell motion and turns him into a cat. That is not the case at all. That is not what happens. There's a scene where it indicates that the cat has taken a cell phone and thrown it in a toilet and flushed it. That does not happen. That is not the case in any way. So I think the trailer has done it a total disservice.
You think this is a case where the movie was kind of recut after they'd made the trailers?
Maybe, but I don't know. I mean, it's...
Like they had some test trailers out there to see what people would like, and then they were like, oh, people didn't like this part.
Yeah. Well, like it looks like... In the trailer, it looks like a part where he's like doing pull-ups. The cat is to try to make him look more human. No, not at all. He doesn't do that at all.
Have you guys followed the news about the Suicide Squad at all?
Oh no. Uh-uh. Well, I've heard that I know that our cousin Joe has mentioned on the radio that he has seen it like 4 or 5 times now and loves it because he gets to see Batman for 30 seconds. So that's worth his movie ticket.
I have seen several of the actors from the film on the Late Night with Stephen Colbert, but I have not seen much about the movie other than I heard it was kind of disappointing.
Yeah, so early on they released a couple trailers for it that made it seem like a really kind of fun sort of action comedy. And I guess it's typical that trailers are done by like a marketing department. So they're edited together by people who don't actually have any artistic connection to the movie. So when the studio got the cut of Suicide Squad, this is by the director who did like Fury, the war movie with Brad Pitt.
Wow.
They were not happy with like how dark it was. Especially after Batman v Superman got savaged by critics for being sort of dark and sort of lacking any fun. So the studio actually hired the trailer company to re-edit the movie.
Oh, that sounds like a horrible idea.
Yeah, which is, I guess, something that's relatively unprecedented.
Well, I mean, I'd heard that Margot Robbie and Will Smith do great jobs, but everybody else was pretty much wasted. And Jared Leto, whatever his name is, was just out of control.
That guy sounds like a real tool.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he does. Have you seen the movie?
No.
Okay. I don't know when I'll ever see an adult movie, or not an adult movie. I'll never know when I'm going to see a movie in the theater without a child present. So God knows when I'll see the next Furious movie. But yeah, I just can't do it. I think maybe I'm growing out of comic book movies.
I read one of the incarnations of the Suicide Squad comic books in the late 80s. I don't know if that was the first one or if that was a relaunch of the title, but I had like the first eight or so issues. And it's a really dark premise. I mean, the premise is the government has captured these supervillains and they force them to go on these suicide missions. That's it. So they're bad guys who are doing maybe good, maybe bad things for the government, but because the alternative is death.
Yeah. So so basically on the Marvel side, Marvel is making a movie called Avengers Civil War or whatever, which is basically the fight between different superheroes over whether registration of mutants is legal or not. And on the other hand, or maybe it's more complicated than that, but versus DC, which is actually condoning slavery.
The comic book nerd in me is cringing about so many things you got factually incorrect in those two sentences, but essentially, yeah, you're right.
Okay. Well, yeah, I've actually read Civil War, and yeah, it's...
So, you don't like Jared Leto?
He's been in interesting stuff, but I don't think I'd want to spend a single second anywhere near him.
No, well, but okay, that aside, but is an actor...
Yeah. It's been a lot. As my younger brother would say, yeah, all right.
Wow.
He was, no, I'm sorry. As my youngest brother would say, yo, he all right.
Sorry, I just spit all over my microphone. Because, we talked about putting Panic Room on there. He's in Panic Room.
Oh, yeah.
And I really rather like Chapter 27, where he plays Mark David Chapman.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
That's a pretty good movie.
No, he I think he's a good performer.
Hey, he played Steve Prefontaine.
Some of his music is actually pretty decent. I don't want to like it, but it's all right.
Well, I would put him mentally in the same category. I know I'm interrupting, but I would put him, at least for me, mentally in the same category as Joaquin Phoenix and Shia LaBeouf.
Those three should do a remake of Three Amigos.
Yes.
It would be like the worst set experience ever. Maybe if you threw James Franco in there as the villain.
Oh, no. James Franco would be great. I'm thinking and they could have David Caruso and Val Kilmer to have cameos.
Yep.
Back to my list, if you don't mind. So Nine Lives, I highly recommend it as a kids movie. It's fine. And actually, Jennifer Garner does great. Neither Kevin Spacey nor Christopher Walken, who I really love Christopher Walken, but they don't really like ham it up too much, which is nice. It's hammed up an appropriate level, but not like over the top. Okay, so next on the list, Paranormal Activity, The Marked Ones. This is Paranormal Activity, the Mexican version. It's fine. It's what you expect. Sinister 2, a creepy horror movie, but not nearly as creepy as the original Sinister with Ethan Hawke. Sinister is great because even though the story itself, the plot itself, is just bananas and really took me out of it, there's this creepy movie element to it where you see like found footage movies or home movies that are super creepy. But yeah, no, this was not nearly as good. It was fine, but meh. The Purge Anarchy. Have you seen any of the Purge movies, either of you?
Nope.
I think I've seen the first one.
Yeah, I love the idea of the Purge. I think both movies did a good job with the idea of the Purge, and like both movies kind of set it up pretty well, but neither movie capitalized on it. Both the endings of both movies were kind of crap. It was kind of a letdown. But I'll keep watching them because I think the premise is so great.
Was The Purge Anarchy the one with Frank Grillo?
Yes.
I like him.
Who's Frank Grillo?
he was the, you're gonna have to reach way back. He was Joel Edgerton's MMA trainer in the movie Warrior.
Oh, yeah, that guy. I don't remember that guy at all. But I will. I'm sure you're right, though, because there's only two Purge movies out, and then one that just came out in the theater. So, okay. So
he was also in Captain America: Winter Soldier.
Huh. Yeah, I didn't like
that guy.
I didn't like Winter Soldier. Anyway, okay,
that's fine. You're wrong.
Yeah, that's fine.
That's fine.
Okay. So next, Z, the movie called Z. It is a French film about a Greek military dictatorship assassinating the popular leader of the opposition Democratic Political Party. Black and white, super kind of European feeling, and really pretty great. It's kind of straightforward, but it's got an interesting ending. So I recommend it. Z. And turns out Z is the, it means something in the movie. So, I revisited Folks, the Roger Moore movie. We are going to have to watch Folks after we get done with all the Roger Moore Bond movies. We have to put Folks in there. Do you remember anything about Folks?
Yes.
Okay. And Drew has never seen it.
He's seen it. He doesn't remember it.
Anthony Perkins is the bad guy. Turns out I love Anthony Perkins. It is. I'm not going to give anything away. But it is a fucking weird movie that's great. But it is weird. And Roger Moore does a fantastic job being a weirdo.
Yeah. All those are true statements.
Okay. Next movie, Oculus. There's a lot of horror movies. I don't get a chance to watch horror movies generally. So now, Oculus is a movie about a mirror. It's a horror movie about a mirror. Karen Gillan is one of the main actress. She's in some series lately or some show that's really popular now, but she did a fine job, but nah, it's just like, bleh. Another horror movie called Southbound. It's kind of anthology sort of crap, like F. Seven Psychopaths? I'm going to put it on the calendar. That's how much I like that movie. I had really low expectations, didn't really know what it was about, and ended up having a lot of fun.
The two trailers I saw looked fantastic.
Well, I'll just warn you about trailers, Nine Lives. Anyway, I don't want to say anything more about Seven Psychopaths other than I do want to talk about it on the program.
No, it looks to me like the same kind of, the trailers to that reminded me in a small way of the trailers to In Bruges.
Exactly.
It gives you a false impression. So I'm already intrigued to what the movie actually really looks like.
Yeah.
But I already expect the movie not to be like the trailer.
I didn't want to mention In Bruges except that it totally is an In Bruges movie.
It looks like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I want to see it.
Not to mention that one of the main characters is Johnny Eyebrows. Patio Eyebrows. And then the last movie I saw, 3 Days of the Condor, with Robert Redford and Faye Dunaway. And Cliff Robertson. Cliff Robertson is fucking amazing. turns out it doesn't quite hold up. It's a little bit like the Parallax View, and it's dated. But
that's a great movie though.
Yeah. Also like the Parallax View though, it's got a kind of a fun ending.
Mm-hmm.
So movies with sort of dark, disturbing endings, I recommend it. 3 Days of the Condor.
Did 3 Days of the Condor feel like the predecessor to Sneakers?
It felt more like those, like the, if you took all of the action out of the Bourne movies. It felt really like a Robert Ludlum kind of book.
Yeah, but how did you get through that? Because that's a lot of suspense and not a lot of release.
No. I don't. Tension. It's tension. There wasn't as much tension.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah. Hey, now. I just like full release. That's all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, yeah. So that was my. My staycation viewing. Thank you guys again for doing the podcast by yourselves that week. And I think that's the end of my housekeeping.
Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages, or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts, dial it already.